What the Tech is brought to you by Storyblocks. Storyblocks Video gives you studio quality 4K stock video without blowing your budget. Two words, unlimited downloads. To find out more, go to storyblocks.com/whatthetech. Cybercrime is all over the news. Hackable, an original podcast from McAfee, answers the question, how worried should I really be? Listen on all major platforms, including Apple Podcasts, and learn if your personal devices put you to risk. Listen and subscribe to Hackable wherever you get your podcasts. And by Netgear. When was the last time you upgraded your home's Wi-Fi? Turn your Wi-Fi up a notch with Netgear's new line of Nighthawk Wi-Fi 6 routers. Whether you're gaming online or watching Netflix in 4K, you'll enjoy buffer-free streaming with zero lag, no matter how many devices you're connecting to the network. To get more information, go to netgear.com/Wi-Fi 6. Make your Wi-Fi feel young again. Everybody, welcome to What the Tech. I'm Andrew Zarin. Of course, I'm joined by Mr. Paul Thurrott. How you doing, Paul?
Pretty good.
Pretty good. I am, my son is sick. He has 101 fever right now, which is pretty normal for a kid, but he's like utterly miserable.
That sounds terrible.
I mean, that's like normal. It's like a normal fever, and he's utterly miserable right now. So my morning has taken a very different turn, but he's finally sleeping, and my father's watching him now. And I'm enjoying a glass of wine for lunch in my favorite glass made by my wife.
It says, is that Andrew, rosé?
And no, it's not rosé, Paul. Don't be ridiculous. It's Pinot Grigio.
Thank you for saying that.
I'm drinking it for Mary Jo Foley. So for everybody watching, you could tweet her and say, Andrew gave you a shout out and he's drinking his Pinot Grigio while doing What the Tech. I'm excited to talk to you about this, about all these topics that we have on hand today. Next week, our schedule is going to be a little weird. I have to figure it out because I'm in Manchester.
And I'm in the Netherlands.
You're in Netherlands. So you're flying out on Tuesday, correct?
Yep.
What time are you flying out of JFK?
Oh, actually, you know what? I'm around during the day on Tuesday.
Yes. Yeah, so
it's like midnight. Let me look at it. It's technically midnight on, where is that true? Let me just look at this to be sure. Sorry. Week.
Yeah, because I'm curious because I'm flying out like 7:30 at a JFK.
I mean, I leave at midnight. It's like 12:05 a.m. on the Wednesday.
Okay, so maybe we could do something on a Monday or we could do, I don't know. I got to figure out the schedule. I don't know how much time I'm going to need. I mean, I technically could do the show on Tuesday and go straight to the airport. Mm-hmm. It's possible. So we'll figure it out for next week. But I'm going to be in Manchester next week. So it's going to be a fun trip.
UK,
yes. Not Manchester, Connecticut.
Or Manchester, New Hampshire.
New Hampshire. Yeah, Manchester, New Hampshire. No, I'm going to
So Manchester, UK is a cool place.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah.
I heard there's a great beer place there. Many
good beer places there.
Yeah. So I'm going to be there for a couple days, helping produce a event at the FUE European Hair Transplant Conference.
Okay. Surprised I'm not invited to this.
You get your cool events and so do I, Paul. We do have a lot to talk about today. Obviously, Windows Modern OS, a lot of people are talking about this. Next week, WWDC, and we're going to find out, you know, what the plan is for iOS apps on the Mac OS. We've already seen some leaks already come out with all this stuff, which I'm I have a theory about this, and I'll save it for when we get to it. But I think this is a much bigger story as far as Apple's business goes. I think this is a much bigger story as to them allowing iOS apps on the Mac. And we'll dive into that and a whole lot more, obviously. But before we continue, I want to talk about our great sponsor, and that's Storyblocks. I'm a content creator. Paul's a content creator. And many of you guys are also content creators. Storyblocks is a phenomenal service where you could get all the content that you need to create unbelievable stuff, like anything from B-roll to After Effects templates to video motion backgrounds for your project. There's a whole slew of content you could get. And this is the cool thing here. So let's say you are looking for studio quality 4K stock video of something. And then you realize 4K stock footage is not cheap, especially royalty-free stuff that you could use on YouTube for personal use or commercial use. With these guys, it's unlimited downloads. Anything in the video members library is yours to download as much as you want, including HD and 4K footage, After Effects templates, motion backgrounds, and more when you sign up for the unlimited video plan. Download anything from their audio and their image library and get all the sound effects, music, photos that you need with their unlimited all-access plan. Plus, get exclusive discounts on millions of additional marketplace clips. So if you need something that's not covered within the unlimited access, guess what? It might be in the marketplace and you get a discount on it. Use your content anywhere you like I told you, including YouTube. All the content is royalty-free for commercial and personal usage. That is a tremendous thing, especially when you're seeing all these people getting takedown notices. This is a great, great service. I'm a big fan of them. We use them for a lot of our stuff, and I encourage you guys to also use them and check them out. Storyblocks.com/whatthetech to learn more. Go to storyblocks.com/whatthetech. Paul, let's talk about this. Okay, before I begin, can you confirm something?
Yes.
This is not Windows 11, correct?
No.
Okay.
No, in the sense that, if there were to be a Windows 11, it would be, yeah.
Okay. I wrote the notes last night. This morning, I'm not going to call the blogs that because I tend to get into trouble because I have a lot of friends that work at these websites.
Mm-hmm.
I was shocked to see a good 3, 4, 5 of them, major websites, are calling this Windows 11.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's funny. Okay.
Yeah.
I've not. I don't know that I've read anything that anyone else wrote, but
yeah. Okay. So let's talk about Modern OS. What is this? Is this another attempt at the Windows 8 concept? Explain it like I don't know anything about this.
Oh, that will be easy because nobody knows anything about this. No, and I don't either. I mean, I should be clear. I mean, we kind of have to speculate, what was the intent of this thing? And so for people who don't understand what's happening, Microsoft released, I think it was 3 blog posts tied to Computex, which is a computer trade show in probably Taipei, I think, in Taiwan. Anyway, it's in the Far East somewhere. But a bunch of PC makers released new PCs, Intel announced new chipsets, new core processor generation, et cetera, et cetera. It just happens every year. But in one of their blog posts, they talk about some of the new PCs. And then at the end, they talked about some IoT stuff, all very specific. And then in the middle, there was this weird 3-4 paragraph thing about Microsoft's vision for a modern OS, which was strange it was strange for a number of reasons, but they were clearly not describing Windows 10.
Yeah.
And Windows 10 is the thing that's running on all those computers they just talked about. And it was like, how did this get jammed in here in the middle? I think they hid it in there to not generate too much news. I think if they had released a blog post specifically Microsoft's vision for the modern OS, it probably would have been even a bigger story because they would have been calling it out as something special. When people asked Microsoft what was the intent of this very vague discussion around a modern OS, what is it? Is it Windows 10? Is it something after Windows 10? Is it some other thing? Whatever. Microsoft simply said, we have nothing to announce at this time, which begs the question, why did they just make an announcement about it? So we all have our theories.
So we're speculating at this point, just to clear things up.
Good, I'm sorry.
I enjoy speculating with you because it's always a rational speculation. It's not like rocket launch is coming out of Windows now,
Well, look, I have some insider information about some of Microsoft's plans. I mean, I can speculate from a slightly educated standpoint, I guess. But I still find this rather bizarre. So I brought up their blog post. That's why my face is so bright, but I just want to make sure I'm not misquoting or misstating anything that they say here. But at a high level, here's an interesting little test for people. What they're describing is, as it says, the idea behind what is a modern OS? Like, what does a modern computing platform look like, right? Seamless updates, secure by default, always connected, sustained performance, cloud connected, AI capabilities.
So a mobile OS.
Well, and that we, yeah. Well, by the way, so some more than one person said, you know, it sounds like what they're describing is iOS, you know, and if you go back and read it and you kind of change out every point where it says a modern OS with iOS. Yeah. For the most part, it's pretty damn close, you know?
Okay. So I want to chime in on this, because here's my thing. The seamless updates obviously is something like almost updates done in the background where you don't even know things are services are updated, applications are updated.
Right. No rebooting, by the way.
No rebooting. This sounds great on a phone, but the way I know power users, how power users use their computer or enterprise, how software is written, sometimes not so great. And companies are very reliant on things to kind of work. How does this kind of implementation affect people that really don't want to touch the back end? You know, this is it. If they're doing updates to, you know, services that are reliant on applications that are reliant on services, how will this impact everybody?
Well, according to Microsoft, it's not going to impact anybody. That's the beauty of it.
Well, if that's the case, Paul.
Yeah, it's not, it sounds perfect. I think the issue here is that, first of all, it's very vague. Second of all, they don't actually explain what they're talking about. And I find that to be odd. Why in this description, for example, would it never say Windows? Not even once, which it does not. At one point, they even capitalized modern as if that was the name of the thing. Right. Hmm. So it went from being a modern OS
to modern OS
as if that were the name. And that's interesting. I don't think that's a great name for anything, because what seems modern today will not seem modern tomorrow and so forth. But like, you know, NT stood for new technology. It wasn't new for that long. But whatever. Okay, that's fine. Microsoft has a rich history of using the term modern. In fact, they refer to Microsoft 365 today as the modern desktop, that combination of Windows 10 plus Office 365 and their management.
They're trying to be hip. They're trying to be,
well,
yeah.
I don't know what they're trying to do. I what I'll say is this. You know, we just had Build, right, which is Microsoft's annual developer show. This would have been the ideal time and place for Microsoft to discuss the future. They're standing in front of developers. We know that Microsoft is developing I don't want to call it a successor to Windows, although if it is successful, it will be a successor to Windows, but another Windows-based platform, which utilizes like the Windows Core OS at its base, just like Windows does and will, but is a simpler system. I call it Lite OS. It's gone by different names. Microsoft, frankly, does not know exactly what it wants this thing to be or when it's going to come out or what it is and all that kind of stuff. It's still kind of up in the air, which I think is why they didn't say anything about it at Build. And yet, here we are, what, 2-3 weeks later, whatever it is, and they've kind of spit out a bunch of information about what they say is their vision for this kind of future OS, whatever it is. So my educated take on this, educated guess, I should say, sorry, based on what I know about what the company is doing, is that this thing is describing Lite OS, right? That this is a Chrome OS-like thin client system that will run web and mobile apps natively and will, if not at first, then certainly eventually allow you to run Windows desktop apps through virtualization, perhaps, remotely, certainly, whatever that the case may be. And that the justification for Microsoft developing such a system is the same justification that Google could use for Chrome OS, which is that people and businesses want something that's simpler, and simpler in every way, simpler to use, simpler to maintain, simpler to update, right? That all leads to a less expensive kind of equation as well. And if you go back and read this thing, again, remember seamless updates, secure by default, always connected, sustained performance, cloud connected, multi-sense, which means it's compatible with pen, voice, touch, and eventually gaze. And then form factor agility, which is kind of lame, but it's just a cute way of saying it will run on a bunch of different device types. You know, Chrome OS makes the bill here as well, right? And I do think that that's what they're describing, is going to be that LightOS will essentially be their version of Chrome OS, and that this is a very vague, high-level description of their goals for the system. Now, what it doesn't matter, mention, of course, is app compatibility, right? Which is that thing that killed Windows RT, Windows 10S, and S mode in the day. And by the way, Windows Phone as well. And that's interesting. And I think part of the reason they don't mention that is they don't want to get too many questions going here, but it is an open question at Microsoft about how they're going to figure that out for this new platform. So I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I don't know what to say. I think that the way this should have been handled is very different from the way it was handled. They should have talked about it at Build. I expect them to talk about this again, say in October, when they will be holding a hardware event, almost certainly in New York City.
Obviously, they didn't have the answers for developers, right? It's easy to say, well, this is kind of our plan in the future when you're writing a blog post. But when you're in front of, you know, your developers, they're going to want to know more.
No, I know that. But there's still a very good reason to present this at a developer show, even if you don't have, you know, it's not like here's our first set of APIs for this new system or something. What you're going to do as Microsoft is allow people to leverage the skills that they have in Windows today for developing software and apply that to this new platform. And, you know, that's the message. Like, we're just putting this on your radar. And we want to begin a conversation, because what we want to do is involve the community. And that community includes developers, but also enthusiasts and people in the Insider program. It includes Microsoft's partners, including PC makers, the companies will make the devices. And it includes the entire ecosystem of enterprise customers and the companies that service those customers. And the idea here is like, look, this is what we're thinking, right? It's deliberately vague. We have some ideas about how maybe we're going to do some of it, but we want to hear from you. You know, Microsoft failed twice trying to make a system like this. It needs to get this one right. And I think part of the deal is, should have been, opening up the discussion to make sure that when this thing does come out, whenever it does, because it won't be this year, is that the thing they release is what people want. You know,
listen,
and I think
I think if you want a preview of what they're planning, just look at Edge, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, Edge, right. So before the new Edge was announced, before Microsoft said that they were going to use Chromium, I looked at what I've seen of the LightOS, and what I thought was, excuse me, this thing looks like Chrome OS to me, but it's obviously based on Windows, and so it's some kind of a different thing. But, sorry, it has it would be lighter than Windows, but let's say heavier than Chrome OS. But now that Microsoft has announced they're embracing Chromium, you have to wonder, will this thing in fact just be Chrome OS, but using Edge instead? Will it be able to run Android apps like Chrome OS could, which would, by the way, solve a lot of problems for Windows, or I guess for Microsoft, we'll say.
Well, there's your ecosystem, right?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, app compat is what killed those other platforms that Microsoft tried earlier. That can't be allowed to happen this time. This system, like those earlier ideas, will exist and coexist with Windows 10, right? It will live next to it. It won't arrive and then Windows goes away. There will always be, or at least for the foreseeable future, will be certain classes of device and usage that will just require a PC, whether it's gaming or software development or science and engineering or whatever it is, these high-end kind of power user type needs, the types of people who today absolutely require specialty Win32 desktop apps. You know, over time, you know, maybe that changes, who knows. But I kind of like the idea of Windows 10 essentially evolving into a workstation type system and this new thing becoming the mainstream solution. Because when you think about most people, they do most of their computing stuff on a phone, but occasionally they need a big screen, they need a real keyboard, and they need some kind of a pointing device. And Microsoft is not the only person, the only company trying to solve this problem. That's why the iPad Pro exists. It's why Chrome OS exists. It's why Chrome OS now works with pens and tablets and 2-in-1s. Everyone is racing for the same future. And so, you know, maybe this thing, if it takes off, becomes a mainstream computing platform, unlike Windows RT and S mode.
Well, the biggest problem with RT was that there was no supported applications that you actually used, especially at launch, right? There was nothing.
So tied to that, though, and this is, I think this is really in some ways just as important, is Windows RT and Windows 10S or Windows 10 and S mode also suffered from the fact that they looked exactly like Windows. So if you put Windows RT next to Windows 8 at the time, or you put S mode next to Windows 10.
Nobody knew. You wouldn't know.
Nobody knows. And I look, there's all kinds of justifications for that. But when someone picks up a computer that looks like Windows and they run it and they can't go to the web and download Chrome, what is this thing that is, it's Windows, but it doesn't run Windows apps? What is this?
And I'm going to tell you something. They're not even going to know it's a different type of Windows. All they're going to say is Windows sucks. I hate the new Windows.
Oh, yeah. No,
it doesn't work. I can't even run applications on it. This sucks. And you're done. Yeah, well, it's over. Game over.
That is what happened. So
the consumer will not think two steps ahead. That's it.
So from Windows RT to S mode, they added the ability to upgrade to a real version of Windows. So that was a neat little plus, but it's an extra step that users have to take. And all of them did, by the way, like not quite literally, but almost literally.
Is there a number on that?
No, they would never. They would never admit to this. It's got to be in the high 90%. There's no way anyone normal could ever use Windows 10S, but whatever. This version, this thing, it's early, but what I've seen, the images I've seen of it, it looks like a lot like Chrome OS. And I think that's
You've
another baby step forward. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I've seen what it looks like.
Is this public or no?
No.
Okay.
And it is important, I think, for Microsoft to differentiate this thing from Windows. And there's two ways you can do it. One is you don't call it Windows. And so whether the name is Modern OS or whatever, I don't know. Light OS is one of those names we've heard. It doesn't really matter. As long as they don't call it Windows. I think it's super important it's not called Windows because that creates an expectation. And then there's just the look and feel of it. It can't be start menu, taskbar, desktop, floating windows. It can't be identical looking because then people have that expectation. But I think when someone picks up a Chromebook, right, or an iPad Pro maybe, they have a different expectation because it's so different. You know.
Yeah. You're not setting the bar at Windows 10, you know, and that's like you said, this was the problem with Windows RT. You picked it up and you said, oh, this is Windows. Okay. It's a new Windows. And then you start using it and you're like, wait a minute. And then who's the one? Okay. So I'm having that reaction, right? I'm like, I don't know what's going on here. This doesn't work. Who's the one next to me? Microsoft or Microsoft rep isn't next to me saying, oh, by the way, this is something totally different. It kind of looks like it, but it's a facade. It's all fake.
Well, it literally looks exactly like it. But you cannot, you have some kind of an HP all-in-one printer. Yeah, you can't load the driver for that. It's not compatible. Or, you know, like I said, iTunes is in the store today, but back in the day, you know, Chrome or iTunes or Adobe Photoshop, whatever it is, it's not going to work.
So I have a question for you. So seeing what you've seen, you would say that this is closer to Chromium OS, right, than Windows?
In look and feel.
Right. Look and feel.
Underneath it is still running the core of Windows, but that's
is
what
that
I mean.
Enough?
What,
is that enough?
Well, I don't know. I guess we'll see. So I would say it's fair to say that, you know, Chrome OS does not control 70% of the consumer PC market, right? So obviously something is not gelling exactly for everybody there. But the things that are right about Chrome OS and Chromebooks actually do make sense for the general populace, and they make sense for businesses too. And if it came from Microsoft, that might be enough to put it over the top. The key is going to be what apps it can run and whether it actually fulfills the promises they just made in this vision statement about a modern OS. But and whether or not you can kind of wean people off of Windows apps. You know, one of the problems, you know, here we are. We're like 4 years into Windows 10. You could tack on another 3 years for Windows 8, maybe even another year because they were talking about it for a while. So 7-8 years into this spaz attack, we have to respond to the iPad. We got to add multi-touch and pen support. Well, they already had pen support, but, you know, kind of refine that and just, you know, make devices that are tablets and 201s. And we're going to have a mobile app platform and a mobile store. And we're going to blah, 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 all this stuff. They, in doing that, they made some huge, huge mistakes. They left behind the user base that was already running on Windows 7 or earlier versions of Windows. They focus too much on the touch tablet stuff. That platform is not mature, and it was never matured into anything special. It's a mobile app platform. You can make toy apps with it. It's not the type of thing that people expect to run on a a Windows computer. They didn't allow those apps to run on previous versions of Windows. They made a new browser called Edge that they didn't allow to run on previous versions of Windows. You know, they made all these mistakes. And so that app platform they made is finally dead and it's being pushed aside. They're bringing back all these legacy tools and things from the past and making them more modern. They're putting Edge on every platform imaginable. They're making all these changes. And so they're responding to it. But the problem for the PC is as everyone has raced forward to mobile, the PC has been relegated to this simplified role for most people. I don't mean for power users, developers, gamers, et cetera, but for most people, when you're, you know, you spend most of your day looking at a tiny phone screen and you only sometimes need to use a keyboard and a mouse and a screen, like a big screen. The PC is an incredibly complex tool for that, right? I mean, that thing should be simpler. It should be cheaper, you know, but it should still, you know, kind of be familiar in a way too. And I think Chrome OS satisfies that today to some degree. And I think that Microsoft is shooting to do the same thing. New system, whatever they call it.
I think it's no matter what you do when you implement, obviously you said it, they can't call this Windows.
No. And that's something I've heard from them as well. Like Microsoft understands they can't call this Windows.
Yeah. This kind of ties into the next thing that I want to talk about, because it's very interesting that they're going this route while Apple's going to take a somewhat similar route as far as their future of their Mac OS. I do want to talk about that, obviously, and a whole lot more, but I want to welcome a new sponsor, and it's actually a podcast that I was turned on to, and I really enjoy this. I was listening to it this morning. You know, we talk a lot about the latest and the greatest internet-connected technology that makes our lives easier, obviously, and a whole lot more fun. But does the emerging technology in our homes, pocket, purse, or even wallet leave us vulnerable to cyber attacks? This is a conversation I constantly have with people is how unaware people are. You know, we as viewers of the show kind of understand the risks of being always connected to the internet as far as our phones go or our laptops, almost everything. We connect to Wi-Fi networks I think that's going to be one of the most talked about pieces of, you know, what we used to do in tech 10 years from now is when we realize how many Wi-Fi open networks people randomly connect to and they get their data breached. From high-profile data breaches to insidious ransomware, cybercrime has been all over the news and even on TV shows like Black Mirror. So you may be wondering, how concerned should I be about my personal data? This is great. I want to introduce this podcast. It's called Hackable. It's an original podcast from McAfee, and they answer these questions and more. It's like Mr. Robot meets Mythbusters. And you can find this on all major podcast platforms like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all of them. This is actually cool. So what they did, the host of the show invites a white hack hacker on the show, and they try to hack a device that he's using. So he on one of the episodes that I listened to recently, the white hat hacker wanted to kind of show the vulnerabilities of a phone, and one of the host's coworkers has an Android phone. And Paul, this was actually pretty cool. He's like, I need your phone. I need to hack it. It'll be fine. Don't worry. And the guy's like, okay, sure. Hands over the phone. And the hacker was able to retrieve photos that were deleted months ago from the phone within, 10 minutes. Wild. Really wild. And it kind of shows you, you know, even your most embarrassing photos could be taken somehow. I always talk about how people trade in their phones. People just think that they just hand in a phone to Verizon, or even when you do a wipe of the phone, it could be a surface wipe. A lot of these stuff could be retrieved, and if somebody is not a good person, they could do a lot of damage with this. I encourage you guys to check out, listen, and subscribe to Hackable on all major podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts. They're on season 4 right now, so there's a whole lot of stuff to listen to. This is actually, I really enjoyed the show, and you know how picky I am about podcasts, so I was very glad to have these guys on board. Again, it's called Hackable on all major podcast platforms. I encourage you guys to go check them out. Paul, isn't that wild? Do you ever think about that? Like, all these people just like, Like, oh, Verizon's going to give me an upgrade. Here you go. Here's my phone.
I know. Every time I get in a rental car and it has everyone's iPhone programmed in there with all their contacts, I just want to start calling people and say, hey, your friend Ted's an idiot.
Yeah. That's when it happens. So Apple has their annual WWDC event, which is for the developers. I think a lot of people have forgotten it's for developers, this event.
Sure.
Everybody's expecting new iPhones.
They have a major public press event, you know.
Yeah. This year, we are anticipating a whole lot of stuff, obviously, but one of the big sides on the Mac OS side is the integration of iOS apps on the Mac OS. We kind of got a little tiny preview of this with the current version of Mac OS, and that's with the News app, which it's a total iOS app on the Mac. And I have to tell you, it's not a bad application. It works exactly how it should work. I tend to use this. I'm not talking about News Plus. I'm talking about the News app in general for people listening. I tend to use this a lot in the morning when I get up. I just go through, like, I have all the sites that I normally would go to. Like, I have, you know, Men's Health, or I have Food Network, or, you know, I have the New York Times, I have 9to5 Mac, I have just technology in general, computer science. Like, I just have a lot of my interests, car stuff. So this makes it very easy. It's a very nicely developed application, but they're going to open the floodgates now, right? The next version is going to have a whole lineup of applications on the platform.
Yep.
Now, the big question is, why would they want to do this? And obviously, I think it's to keep you in the ecosystem. The Mac sale platform, I mean, Mac in general has kind of plateaued, right? They're not gaining any traction at this point. Is this enough to keep people in?
I mean, the Mac suffers from an app glut in the same way that Windows 10 does, right? There's, you know, Apple created a Mac app store. It is whatever it is. I mean, you know, they were smart enough in a way not to create a new app platform. They have rules for apps that need to be in the store. But, you know, it's one of those, it's the idea of an app store is a good one. I feel like Microsoft botched it by making it a mobile app platform. Apple, I think, did kind of the right thing by making it just an app store. And so, you know, it's Mac apps. But now here we are several years later. And like you said, you know, Mac sales have plateaued. They've probably fallen, really, I mean, since their height. The halo effect that they were getting from the iPhone has kind of come and gone. So what can we do for this platform? You know, Apple's strategy, I mean, there's always positive and negative ways to look at this, but the reality is it's a business, and they want to lock you in as a customer, and they want you to stay in the ecosystem as much as possible. So obviously, you're not going to buy a new Mac every 2 years, but if you spend a couple of grand or $3,000 or whatever it is on a Mac, and you're in the family, you know.
Yeah.
So you want to get more of those Apple services going on that platform. They want to keep your eyeballs, you know, so you can bring the iOS apps there. And that brings that stuff over automatically. You know, it's a net good thing. There's nothing to complain about. iPad apps in particular are sophisticated enough that they would, in many cases, look fine and be fine running on a desktop platform. That was a problem Microsoft never solved. You know, their mobile apps were always terrible. And so putting them on a desktop, but it didn't really help, you know. Yeah. But I think the iOS app availability on macOS will help. I don't mean to say they're going to, you know, raise market share or whatever, but it will certainly help stem the free fall there. And for people who use the platform, it's just a good thing. I mean, if Mac users probably don't typically run Android phones, right? I mean, so having that familiar app experience is good, you know?
Well, I'm curious to see, like, what percentage of what uses what, you know? Like, I'm always curious about the analytics side of things because you can really learn a lot about and forecast your audience. That's something that I recently got hired by a company because I'm pretty decent at forecasting analytics and seeing, you know, looking at the trends and kind of guessing the next 6 to, you know, 12 months or 18 months or 24 months based on trends from the consumer side of things. On the Apple side, however, they're very secretive about their numbers, always have been. And, you know, when you look at if I'm, you know, you're obviously, this is your gateway drug, right? Your gateway is the iPhone. I'm not before it was the iPod and the iPod Touch and whatever, but which I do want to talk about the iPod Touch. I'm going to defend Apple about the iPod Touch, Paul.
All right.
We are going backwards in what to tech. You know my love for the iPod Touch, and I'm going to defend them, and I'm going to give you a reason why it was good to revise this thing. So, but this is your gateway as a consumer. You may get into this if you're, you know, 16, 17, 15, whatever. Yeah. Your parents get you an iPhone. You're in the ecosystem now.
Yep.
The odds are you don't have a MacBook.
Right, but you go to the Apple Store and you're like, look at these pretty computers.
But you go to the Apple Store and you look at all these pretty computers. So now you're trying to convince yourself. Now you're 18, 19, 20. You're going to go buy this on your own, hopefully. You already have an iPad.
Or you're going off to college and your parents buy you this thing. It's a four-year investment. And they, you know, they're spending a couple grand or more. But
Paul, they are incorporating the QVC mentality. Okay? And I'm going to explain to you what I mean by this. You would buy a Mac because it was better. It was the best looking laptop on the market at that point. It was pretty. It was sleek. It looked nice. You paid the premium. Now, a lot of those additions, a lot of those pluses are on the PC side. The PC market is booming with beautiful, beautiful devices. Apple doesn't have the advantage as far as craftsmanship goes on their hardware. Everybody's doing Apple and better at this point. I can name you 7 computers off the top of my head that I would say that are better than the current MacBook lineup from beginning to end. Now, you're thinking, okay, but you know what? I have an iPhone and I have an iPad and I have all these apps. Why would I go and start over again? I could just spend the money on a Mac and get all my apps there. The QVC mentality. You're not only are you buying this phone, this laptop, you're getting $1,000 worth of applications absolutely for free, you know? Okay. I think that's going to play a part in this.
Yeah. I mean, it's probably as much about the services too. You know, Apple is making this big services push. So coincidentally, you know, they're bringing over these apps that maybe in some cases weren't on the Mac before. Maybe you had to go to a website or whatever. And again, you know, it's a good, you know, if you're in a college dorm room, if you're a young kid or whatever, you know, maybe you're out in the world, you can watch Netflix on or Apple's TV service, whatever it's called. You know, on a phone, it's fine. But when you're sitting in your dorm room or in your bed up in your room or whatever, crack open a laptop. You know, it's a bigger screen.
Yeah.
It's good.
Do you think this will play? I mean, obviously, I was being comical here with my theory a little bit. But do you think that'll make a play as far as if you're already in the ecosystem and you've been in for years and you've invested, you know, hundreds of dollars in applications? Yeah. Not saying a lot of people do, but me, for example, I rely on a lot of iOS-based, very specific applications for my day-to-day needs for work. Will this play a part in people's purchasing?
Yeah. I mean, but again, it's not just apps. I mean, it's content you might have bought through iTunes. I know iTunes is on the Mac today, but iTunes is a terrible application. And now they're making a modern app for that and making it available. And that, you know, may keep people going. I mean, you know, on that platform. So I think it's a smart thing to do. I don't mean to suggest it's going to rejuvenate Mac sales or anything like that, but it's hard to complain about it because whatever lock-in reasons that Apple has for doing this kind of don't matter because for the actual users of these machines, it's a net win. So it's good. It's fine. There's nothing wrong with it. It's a great app platform. You know, like I said, unlike, you know, this is the problem Microsoft had. The app platform that Microsoft created they created it from scratch. They had a phone app platform. All they did was copy it. They didn't make them compatible at first. It was stupid. And they lost a lot of time. We're stuck here today with these terrible toy apps.
Yeah.
So, you know, Apple's, look, they're always late to market. This is how they do things. They're kind of methodical. But when they get this thing done, it's going to be great.
So some of the other things we're going to get, we're obviously getting a preview into iOS 13. They're going to kind of show some of the features. I'm sure it's not. We're not looking at from everything I've read. We're not looking at an overhaul, which it's been quite a long time since iOS has gotten an overhaul, right?
Yeah, iOS 7, right, was the release that added this new UI.
So we're looking at 7 years.
They're
going to
finally get a dark mode. Here we are, 6 versions later.
You know?
I'm looking for some really basic updates to iOS. I got to be honest. You know, the ability to place an icon anywhere in the screen would be kind of cool. Something Android's had 2,000 years. I know. Just basic stuff. It's weird to me that the engineers at Apple can't figure that one out.
So, well, Safari might be getting a download manager.
Wow, look at that. Neat.
Yeah.
What a neat forward-looking feature.
Yeah, mail app is going to get an update. The Maps app is going to get an update. iMessage is going to get an update, or Messages. Sure. I don't know if it's iMessage anymore.
I think they just call it Messages. Yeah.
So another speculation here, and I'm going to speculate. I don't anticipate this, but this is something I've seen a lot of people speculate, and that's people saying that the iPad, especially the Pro line, possibly gets mouse support.
Yeah. I don't know.
I have to tell you, how would it be utilized in a way? I guess it would be fine, right? They would add a track. It wouldn't be like a mouse map, or you could actually do a mouse map, but it would probably be a trackpad on the keyboard. I was really for this about three years ago. Now I don't know if it makes a difference.
I think it would make a difference. Bringing iOS apps to the Mac is fine, but that system fundamentally is still complex, legacy, heavy, you know, resource requirements, et cetera. So two things to the iPad Pro and mouse support, right, is if you add mouse support to that device, what you've created is something that better competes in that space we were just talking about, the Chrome OS thing, right? It becomes a mainstream solution where the Mac becomes a workstation OS. I think that makes sense. But the other reason to suspect that this might be happening, or certainly could happen, is they are bringing iOS apps to the Mac. And what that means is developers for the first time who make only iOS apps are going to need to change their apps to handle a mouse pointer, right? Right now it's like giant touch targets and all this. So just by virtue of the fact that they're bringing iOS apps to the Mac, they will have to support keyboard shortcuts, which I guess they probably could on iOS today, but most probably don't. And this kind of fine grain pointer control kind of a thing. And once you have some collection of apps that supports that stuff, adding mouse support to the iPad is possible. I don't mean,
you know, it'd be wonderful.
It's a no brainer, but Apple is strangely obstinate about things like this. You know, this is the company who complained about the 2-in-1 computers that Microsoft was selling years ago because it's tiring to hold your hand out here like this.
And nobody,
but that's what you have to do on an iPad. So I don't, you know, it's like we have a keyboard, but you know, when you want to do something on a screen, you got to use your finger. Like, you know,
how do you think this is going to change? So I think obviously, and Apple's been very anti touch support in Mac OS, right? That they don't want to do this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now you're bringing over touch supported applications.
I know.
And you're modifying them for the desktop. You could easily do that. You could do the reverse, right? Where you add mouse support on iOS. Why do you think this is going to end like now, this whole no touch on the Mac? It has to, right? Within the next year, at least.
I don't know. I mean, does it make sense for Apple to make that kind of investment now? I mean, I don't agree with them not adding touch before this. Like, I don't agree with it. I this decision, it was always wrong to me. I don't get it. But here we are. It's 2019. They still haven't done it. You know, the mainstream platform that they have today is not the Mac. It's iOS, right? And so iOS supports touch. It supports Pen. It has a great app ecosystem. It's got a store. It's going great. I mean, they're kind of antitrust issues, but it's going maybe a little too great, you know, whatever. To me, it would be easier and make more sense to bring a mouse to that platform than it does now to bring touch and a pen and whatever else to the Mac. Like the Mac becomes such an esoteric kind of machine compared to an iPad. I'm just not sure it matters anymore. I don't know.
You know where it matters? You want the generational computer usage.
Mm-hmm,
My daughter loves her HP laptop.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't want to use an iPad, even though she only does touch. But you know, she's a kid, so that's what she uses. She uses a laptop, and she likes. She's 3.5. She prefers the laptop, but she does touch constantly. She flips into tablet mode, and just does touch stuff. When you are talking about a generation that's brought up on this, and you want to hold a market, you want to keep your market share going in 15 years. she'll probably age of purchasing. Is she going to buy something that doesn't have the support of something she's used her whole life? Or is she going to, you know what I mean? Like,
it's a good idea. Right. I mean, even as an adult, when I move to the Mac, I find myself touching the screen.
I use my HP laptop 2 days in a row, Paul. 2 days in a row. That's all I use. I'm doing this on my screen. I never thought I needed it or they needed it until I had to explain to my kids. Oh, no, daddy's laptop doesn't have touchscreen. And they look at me. Yeah, and my daughter looks at me and says, you know what? That Tim Cook, he's no good. She looks at me just like that. That Tim Cook's no good.
That dirty dog.
You know, if Steve Jobs was around, you know, and then she walks away. She goes on a whole rant about the Bill Gates era of Microsoft, and then I tune out at that point.
Well, that was the high point of personal computing.
That's what she tells me all the time.
Yeah.
But, you know, this is we're going to find out. I mean, they do have a new screen, right? 16-inch screen. Why? That perfect time to do touchscreen.
Well, I guess. I mean, it seems like the bigger the screen, the less incentivized you would be to touch it. But anyway, it's inexcusable to me they never did this. There's such a baseline in the PC world now. And by the way, in the Chromebook world too, right? Chromebook has tablets. They've got 2-in-1s. They have pens, smart pen support. Obviously multi-touch. They run mobile apps. I mean, Apple is slowly, my God, it's like, okay, you know, it's going to take us a couple of years. You know, even though iOS and Mac are based on the same exact platform, it's going to take a while.
Yeah.
You know, the way they move sometimes for people like me and you, I would imagine, a little frustrating, you know. So, yeah, maybe they'll get to it. I don't know.
Yeah. We'll see. I want to do a couple rapid fire stuff, but before we do, I want to talk about our new friend and my favorite router, and that's Netgear. Netgear's new line of Nighthawk Wi-Fi 6 routers. Makes things so much easier. The Nighthawk Wi-Fi 6 routers gives you ultra-fast speeds and wider coverage throughout your home. I installed the router I showed you last week. And so I put it, I couldn't do it all the way where I wanted to put it because I didn't run the line. So I put it kind of right outside my office. And the gauge was Memorial Day, where I don't have any Wi-Fi in my backyard, ever. So when I was doing the test, I realized that it was reaching, obviously, even in my studio. And I installed it, and I was able to get Wi-Fi almost to the end of the block, like two homes down this way. My signal was reaching. So I was blown away by it. I actually really like their line of routers, the Nighthawk line. Obviously, you get 4 times the capabilities compared to today's Wi-Fi with Wi-Fi 6, which means you can connect more devices and stream simultaneously without impacting Wi-Fi speeds or reliability. Listen, everybody's doing Netflix. Everybody's doing on-demand content. All my kids watch is, you know, barely they're watching Netflix. This is a topic for next week I want to talk to you about, Paul. How I think these pay services like Netflix and Hulu, they're really in danger. And YouTube could really capitalize on this. I know that their red line, their premium line of content that they were creating didn't go over too well. But all day long, I have YouTube playing in some capacity in my house between me and my kids and my wife. So I think, you know, with streaming, obviously, I kind of went on a tangent here, but I do want to get back to this. The devices of today and tomorrow demand more. Your old Wi-Fi is timing out. When is the last time you changed your Wi-Fi router? A lot of times these things are sitting in your house for years and not getting an upgrade. If you stream your shows on services like Netflix and Hulu, the newest line of high-performance routers from Netgear will eliminate buffering and let you stream smoothly in 4K. It's like getting the VIP treatment with your Wi-Fi router. Guys, go to Netflix. Go to netgear.com/Wi-Fi and the number 6. That's Wi-Fi 6. netgear.com/Wi-Fi 6 to learn more. We've been talking about doing a Wi-Fi remodel in this house on the show for many years, and I finally started it with this Netgear router, and I absolutely love it. It's really changing things for me. I have a whole process. I'm actually buying more devices to kind of give you a whole experience of what I'm doing, and when I'm done, I'm going to film it and show you guys. Netgear.com/Wi-Fi 6. Okay, so I had a couple topics here. I know we're running out of time. You have a meeting today, correct?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
You can tell how excited I am by that.
We need to talk about 10 years of Bing.
Okay. That could be a quick conversation.
There was a lot of hope when Bing launched. There was. And I have to tell you, Bing still does things better than Google.
Yeah, some things. That's true.
They do image searches better.
Yep, it is better.
They're able to give you more detailed information better than upfront if I'm searching for something quick. The rewards, obviously. Many people have bought Xboxes with their rewards. I hear this all the time, that they essentially pay you to use their service. What is it? Why didn't it take off the way it was anticipated to be taken off?
Oh, man. You know, Microsoft never saw this part of the web coming, right? They never understood that this was going to be a big thing. And so they've had to kind of crawl into markets. Like even something like, Microsoft had like this kind of corporate email non-standard that they created for themselves, which they used with Microsoft Outlook and Exchange. And before Exchange, it was like Microsoft Mail and whatever. So, they bought their way into Hotmail, right? I don't know that they bought their way into search, but they, seeing Google take off, they belatedly realized, oh my God, we need to do something like this. And, they've been playing, basically playing catch up ever since. They're never going to catch Google. I mean, I think anyone would admit that. So they've tried to recast it over the years as being different things. The whole purpose of Bing was to rebrand their existing search service and to differentiate it from Google, right? And back in 2009, when they announced this, they were calling it a decision engine. And the idea there was that anyone could Google something. You want to look up a fact. What's the capital of Vermont? Or what's the weather going to be like tomorrow? Whatever. Anyone can do that. But they were hoping that through their data center capabilities at the time that they could provide insights when you ask Bing questions, and it would help you make decisions better than Google does, which obviously is nonsense. But the reason Bing is still around is that it's still an incredible data set for Microsoft, and it powers a lot of their AI and machine learning back-end services.
Yeah.
Most crucially, the Microsoft Graph, which is basically kind of the future of the company from a, kind of an end user perspective. It's a way to collate information from all kinds of different sources and then, again, help you make decisions. In other words, it's going to surface things in interesting ways for the user that wouldn't otherwise be possible. So, it's less than 10% worldwide market share, usage share, whatever, but it's still a really big source of data for Microsoft and something that's very crucial. And as Mary Jo noted yesterday on Windows Weekly, I didn't actually remember or know this, but apparently it's even profitable. So,
Something that I actually use Bing for two specific things. One is image searches, right? Because sometimes I need to find a very high res image, and Google kind of buries it. Bing doesn't for me, so I tend to use Bing. Yeah.
Google had to do that. They were getting sued by content creators.
If I need to kind of find somebody that is not like a online celebrity or has any kind of notoriety, like let's say a CEO of a company, I'm trying to get some information on somebody to contact them. I use Bing over Google because Bing taps into LinkedIn. So what it does, if I put in somebody's name, the first search always, like when it's giving me like the history of somebody, will always be a LinkedIn article.
Okay.
Will be their LinkedIn page, which is very helpful when I'm trying to figure out who it is. For me, that's what I use it for. The other thing is I just did a search for me under images. I'm just going to give you what the recommended for me is. Andrew Zarian bald. Andrew Zarian before and after. Andrew Zarian propecia. Andrew Zarian hair loss. Andrew Zarian wife. Jessica Zarian. Andrew Zarian wife. GF Key Network. And then the rest is What the Tech. That's my search. And then Leah Laporte. So I guess people are cross-referencing me with Leah Laporte. Andrew Zarian, Leah Laporte.
Right.
I think it's hysterical. But I guess a lot of the Bald Truth watchers use Bing because they constantly search about my hair loss. Andrew Zarian hair transplant. That's another one.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. That's Bing. I want to see what Google tells me. Let's see. Google. before we wrap it up here. Andrew Zarian. I'm Googling myself, Paul, live on the air. Yeah. Howard Stern. Mm-hmm. Cochita Wurst. Do you know who that is?
No.
I want you to Google Cochita Wurst. Cochita Wurst is a... I don't want to get the terminology wrong. I believe it is a man who identifies as a woman
and looks like me.
Kind of looks like me.
It does. You know, I've always thought you'd make a very pretty woman.
Yeah. And then it's just like Andrew Zarian's wife. A lot of people want to know what my wife looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And then and then Lawrence Zarian, I guess he's some fashion guy. I always find it funny what people search for. But I think Bing does a way better job at this, in my opinion, when it comes to, you know, searching and stuff like that. Google Andrew Zarian wife and Andrew Zarian Propecia are the two top search related, two top searched outside of my name, which is really funny. Do you think there's, obviously they make some money off of this before we wrap it up. Do you think they're going to put more emphasis on Bing going forward?
No.
Or they're just letting it be?
I don't know. I wouldn't say they're letting it be, but I mean, it works well as a back-end service. So it's the back-end service for much of Yahoo search still, although that expires in July. We'll see what happens then. They have a deal with Apple, right? Isn't it the default search service on an iPhone still? It powers Siri. It powers, like I said, the Microsoft Graph on the back end for Microsoft, and that pumps into a bunch of different stuff. There's a lot of stuff, a lot of Bing services for developers on Windows, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, it's as a direct search engine competitor to Google, no, it's not been particularly successful. But by the way, here's a little statistical thing for you to consider.
Yeah.
If you compare the usage of Bing to that of Google, it's better than the usage of a Mac compared to Windows.
Interesting.
Yeah. So no one would ever describe the Mac as a disaster, but many people describe Bing as a disaster. So,
but
granted,
why is
Apple
it a disaster?
Sells.
But here's a question. Why?
Well,
perception.
Okay. It's not a disaster. It just never succeeded at its primary task. I mean, you know, 10%. It's 8-point-something% usage or whatever the figure is. But
yeah.
You know, the Mac is an expensive device that sells in, you know, millions of units per quarter. It's obviously hugely profitable for Apple.
Listen, it doesn't matter how many TV shows you pay to say, hey, do me a favor, can you Bing that for me?
Oh yeah, no one will ever use that as a verb in real life. Never. Yep.
Google hit the nail on the head with something. Again, they came in a time that search was terrible. Alta Vista, Yahoo. Sure. It was, and they got it, I guess, you know. They were able to kind of dominate it because it was clean. It wasn't cluttered. They weren't selling you something, even though they were. You know, search is still king, and for especially for them. Look at their income. Look at where their money comes from, right? Google search. Google ads. All right, Paul. So next week, we'll figure out the schedule, but I'm looking forward to going to Manchester. I will be in Manchester from the 5th to the 10th. I believe. Oh. No, the 4th. Yeah, the 5th to the 10th, I'll be there. So any viewer wants to maybe get a drink, I have a couple places that I'm planning on doing something. I know I got a couple of feedback over the last couple of weeks from people saying, like, hey, listen, I live right by there. I'd love to grab a drink. I think maybe I'll do like a little hangout thing, you know, where we could all get together and go to a pub there and have a couple of drinks. I did it in Ireland, which was wild. I'll tell that story on another time when we have some time. All things Paul, go to Therot.com. Therot Premium. Highly recommend you guys sign up for Therot Premium. You get all these articles. You get forum access. A lot of cool stuff there on Therot Premium. Go sign up. Also, our Patreon, if you enjoy the show and you want to continue, you want to help us continue the show and grow the show, go to patreon.com/whatthetech. I'm going to be doing something for the next 10, 15 minutes as a premium product on Patreon. But if you're watching live, you can stay tuned and continue watching. If not, listen, just go to patreon.com/whatthetech. $1, $2, $3, whatever you feel like doing per episode, you can fund us, and it pays the bills. Listen, Paul has kids going to college. I got tuitions I got to save up for. Do you know how expensive two kids are, Paul? A boy and a girl? Do you know how expensive this could be?
Yeah, actually,
I'm learning. I'm learning how expensive it could be.
Yeah.
It's very expensive. Anything coming up, Paul?
By the way, I'm sorry.
I know you're going. I'll do the plug. Follow him on Twitter. We'll be back next week. We'll see you next time. Take care.